over 50 years. 90.1 KPFT
FM. This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 5 p.m. on a Thursday, and time for So What's Your Story? We're the only program in Houston devoted entirely to stories and storytelling, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Keen, and KPFT is winding down its pledge drive. So now is the time to really become a part of this radio station with your support. Call us at 713-526-5738, and that's also 713-JAM-KPFT. Or you can go to kpft.org and click on the donations button, and then you can scroll down to our program, So What's Your Story, to designate us as the program you support with your donation. And you know, when it's this late in the pledge drive, you just might be the one to put us over the top and reach our goals. So that's 713-526-5738, or go to kpft.org and click on donations.
Well, a headline on BBC News today said, 500,000 flee Ukraine as fighting rages. And there'll probably be countless more in the coming days. So there's yet another refugee crisis upon us. And today we're going to hear stories from people who survived a similar tragedy that unfolded about 40 years ago. That is the heartbreaking story of the Vietnamese boat people. About 1 million desperate people fled Vietnam in rickety boats after the American military left Vietnam, or some might say abandoned Vietnam. These boat people faced shipwrecks, drownings, starvation, disease, rape, and brutal attacks from pirates. Meanwhile, thousands of other ships and boats passed them by, refusing to help. The UN estimates that about 400,000 boat people died. 400,000. So our guests today are three of those brave people who fled Vietnam in rickety boats and fortunately survived to tell their stories. They are An Lan Nguyen, Judy Lee, and Tu Dang. Well, our first guest today will be Dr. An Lan Nguyen. Dr. Nguyen is, of course, from Vietnam, and she is currently the founder and executive director of Lyceum Global Life Skills and Professional Development. Dr. Nguyen was appointed by President Obama to serve as the chair of the Vietnam Education Foundation. And Dr. Nguyen is also a writer, and her first book became an international bestseller. It's called Living Your Best Life Now. Dr. Nguyen, it's an honor to have you here on So What's Your Story?
Hello. Hi. Thank you so much for including me in this program. I'm very honored to share my story with you.
We're honored to have you here, An Lan. Now, An Lan, you have an intriguing story of your escape from Vietnam. Let's hear it from the beginning.
So basically, I want you to bring back about 2 a.m. in the morning. it was really dark in the spring of 1980. And there was a little boat. It's the international border between Vietnam and Thailand. And there was a very little boat. It's just like 15 meters long, which is like about 50 feet. 300 people stuck in that boat. And it's just like sardine, like everybody just stick. And I was one of them. Back then I was a teenager. And it's really dark. And then all of a sudden, people start seeing some water get into the boat. Oh my gosh, water get into the boat. We need to get the water out. And everybody frantically tried to get rid of the water. And finally, the captain decided that he has to go back because if we continue, we all die. So on the way back, and it was really dark, we didn't know where we are. And basically around 300 meters from the shore, the boat starts sinking. So people crying, babies crying, and people know how to swim, they swim. They jump down to the water, and people who couldn't swim, they just yelling. And it's just so chaotic. And luckily, I was able to swim. So my brother and I was on that boat, and we were able to swim. But that night, it was a really tragic night for me because half the people died, including my teacher. So I escaped with my teacher because my mom couldn't afford the whole family. So my teacher was just like my guardian, and he died in that trip.
Wow.
And, you know, that from that trip, so I was able to escape back to Saigon and try another trip. And it took my father nine attempts before he was able to be successful. So it's all of that. But that night was the deciding factor that from that I realized the values of freedom. Freedom is not free.
Yes. Well, Alan, tell us about your life leading up to that. I mean, you were right in the thick of the Vietnam War era. What was it like going through that? And what led you to believe you just had to leave?
When I was 6 years old, it was back in Hue. I was born in Hue, which is a city. I belong to a royal family. And if you remember 1968, there was the war is really on its high, right?
And
I got used to listen to all the sounds of the, you know, the bombing and everything. But that event where they would be called Tet Offensive, where the communists came in and they killed tons of people. It's a massacre happened in Hue. I was only 5, 6 years old. I still remember the energy. It was so sad. Like three of my own uncle and family in my family was killed. And they bury everybody in, you know, alive inside the grave because they want to save the bullet. That's how the cruelty of the region back then. So I belong to the South. So when the South lost to the North, my dad was put in re-education camp. And we tried to survive, but at the end, my dad, my mom said, there's the only way, one way out, which is like, you know, we have to escape. And it took my dad 9 times. I tried three times. I was not successful. And that one night, I remember for the rest of my life. Yeah, so we arrived under my dad escaped. And then my dad sponsored my family and I finally reunited with him and they came here. Mm-hmm. And then from Canada, I got married. I met my husband from Texas and I ended up being here. And now I'm a very proud American. I have lived here for more than 28 years and I really love Houston.
So your successful departure, tell us about that. How did you successfully finally leave?
I successfully finally leave with my father. So my father escaped by boat 9 times. Mm-hmm. The 9th attempt, he was able to be successful. So we came to Canada. He was sponsored by some kind of Canadian organization.
So you did leave by boat, correct?
I actually left by boat three times, but then I came back, right? Of all of that. And my dad arrived and then he sponsored us over. So I came over as an immigrant.
Okay.
But I consider myself as a boat person because I had so many experience with that. And I felt that very strongly connected with all the people who died.
And you say you're from royalty.
Yes. the Nguyen Dynasty, if you know the last dynasty in Hue.
Uh-huh. So even for somebody in royalty like that, you had to go through this terrible experience with the boat.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us about your life since then in Houston. How has it been for you to adjust to life in America? Memories of Vietnam?
I never forget those evenings when half of the boat died. So I actually became an activist even when I was studying. So I had to catch up with time. So I worked full time and studied full time. Mm-hmm. So basically, it very hard work at the beginning, but I always managed to volunteer. And mm-hmm. mostly I volunteered to serve to help the refugees, especially the Vietnamese refugees. If you remember in the early 90s, they closed all the refugee camps.
Yes.
And that was a forced repatriation. And there's some people, they kill themselves because they know what's going to happen for them after they come back. So all of that. So I actually volunteer a lot. I volunteer about 2,000 hours per year since the time I came to America until now. And finally, I was appointed by President Obama to serve on a national foundation called Vietnam Education Foundation, which is foster the collaboration between the United States and Vietnam after the bilateral trade agreement was established back in 1995.
Well, that's exciting. So that was trade issues you worked with that organization, or what all did you do?
Education. It's foster the collaboration between the United States and Vietnam through the areas of exchange education.
Great.
So basically, the foundation provided, I believe, about $5 million in funding for scholarship to bring the Vietnamese national student to United States to study PhD or master program in STEM, like mm-hmm. science, technology, engineering, mathematics,
sure.
and also sending professor from U.S. to Vietnam to teach. Mm-hmm. And also, so it's like providing a collaboration between the two countries, kind of to create a peaceful connection back to normal.
Sure. Well, when your father left Vietnam, did he have America as a specific destination in mind, or did he just want to get out?
He just wanted to get out. His boat had no ideas which country, like America, United States, Canada, or France, or whoever.
So how did he end up in Canada? He went to Canada first, correct?
He speaks French. And he also, I think it's just by chance, because mm-hmm. like he was interviewed by the Canadian, some of the Canadian charities, and because he speaks French fluently.
Ah.
You know, like all the older generation, they speak French because we used to be a French colony.
Right.
So my father, because of the royal family and all, they speak French a lot. Yeah.
So he had no idea where he'd end up, but he just happened to end up in Canada.
Yeah.
And now you're in Texas.
Yes.
What about siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. And I have a sister who staying in Arizona. So mm-hmm. both of us got married to Americans and moved to United States. And my other sibling is currently living in Toronto, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, grown up being professional in different careers, banking industry, consultant. Yeah.
I'm always amazed at the success achieved by so many refugees. You hear some people say refugees are a drain on the economy. That is bull. It is the opposite.
Yes, yes. Let's look at my mother-in-law. Can I share with you some story about my mother-in-law?
I would love to hear that.
She brought with her 10 children. So imagine a woman that does not speak English, okay? And she basically was forced into the economic zone because her husband, who is a high-ranking officer in the CIA, and you know how he was treated? So he was somewhere in the jungle in the North education camp.
Wow.
So she basically took care of 10 children, no husband, and they push her out of her house to a new economic zone, no electricity, no water. So she built a boat. She's saving up money to build a boat. And then my husband is the oldest son. So she assigned my husband to take some lesson about driving the boat and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So all of her children old enough to do the fishing, they pretend it as the fishing boat, right? And after a year, when they ready, plan everything, boom. One day, she took 10 children. And the boat is tiny. It's like, I think it's about 20 meters long.
Mm-hmm.
Very small boat.
She brought 10 children.
And they came through all kinds of hassle. And she was such a wonderful woman. I mean, she anticipated that maybe the electricity might be gone or something. So she asked them to bring some cloth so that when the electricity died, she make it become a sailboat. So my husband told me all of this story, and now she is about to celebrate her 90th birthday here.
Great.
In Houston. How wonderful is that? And the 10 children, she brought in the 10 children, and now they all business owners, successful business owners,
incredible.
Professors, professionals, and they all contributing to the vitality and the vibrant society of the city that we call Houston.
Yes, exactly. Now, we talked about her before the program. I wanted to get her on to say a few words, but apparently her English isn't good enough. But you've told her story pretty well here. And didn't you say you were writing a book about your mother?
Yes. Yes, I am collecting all of this information because she has a fascinating story.
Yeah.
The story of hardship. But I think it's not only her. A lot of Vietnamese women is like that. Women, Vietnamese women, both are from the North and the South. Mm-hmm. They always have husbands who are spend most of his life in the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never home. And when they home, they have a kid. And then the husband go away again. And then so it's very typical. Mm-hmm. But the resilience that they show, like no husband, and she came here in America, no English, $20 in her pocket, which is a sheer determination and some help of friends. She started with a very small business. She became one of the most successful business owner. Mm-hmm. And also she worked very hard. She worked so hard. I never seen a woman that worked so hard. And then she had to cope with cancer.
Oh boy.
And a lot of other hardship. But 15 years later, she was reunited with my father-in-law.
Oh, she was.
Because my father-in-law got out of the prison, and then he walked on foot through the jungle of Cambodia.
So when your mother-in-law left with her 10 kids, the father was still in prison in Vietnam for 15 years?
Yeah.
Tell me about him a little bit. He walked through the forest. He escaped.
Yeah, I know. It's just amazing, right? So he actually was in prison for 13 years. So after he got out, right, all the family's gone, right? So he tried to find different way. And finally, he walked across the jungle.
Wow.
And remember, during that time, Khmer Rouge is really active. So it was a blessing. Like, I think thanks to God's grace, that my father-in-law was able to overcome all of that and finally arrive to the border, to Thailand. And from that, he contacted, because he was working for CIA before, so he was lifted, took it to Philippines, get it ready to resettle, and then reunited with my mother-in-law.
Right.
And they live happily for another 21 years before my father passed away. My father-in-law passed away.
Well, I'm glad they got back together there. Well, tell me about returning to Vietnam. What was that like?
That's very interesting. And it was very emotional. I didn't plan to go back to Vietnam that soon, but not too soon, actually, because 29 years since I left. I didn't want to come back just for the sake of coming back, right? If I go back, I need to be able to serve or to do something that creates some impact to help. And it was a blessing that I was appointed by President Barack Obama to serve on this national foundation. So the first trip was, it's just orientation that any board member had to take this trip back to Vietnam. And then I traveled along with 15 other American professors. They are all from the National Science Academy. So they came with me to interview the students to be selected into the fellowship program. So, you know, so I shared with them my story. I said it had been 29 years that I have not been back. So they all look at me and waiting for me when we arrive at the airport. Elan, have you cried yet? Elan, have you cried yet? And actually, initially, I arrived in Hanoi. And Hanoi, I never was there before. So that was the first time I got the experience visiting Hanoi. Uh-huh. And that was when my heart really moved. It was the first time that I came back. I remember that evening, I came to the house that I used to live, mm-hmm. grew up when I was a child, and I cried. It was dark at night, around 10 p.m. And I took a taxi with my friend, came to that. Like, my friend helped me, otherwise I wouldn't be able to recognize my old home, right? Wow. So I stood in front of the home that I grew up there, and I cried.
Oh, yeah.
It's very emotional.
Would you say Houston is a good city for welcoming the Vietnamese refugees from your experience?
That's my experience. I love Houston. Mm-hmm. I love Houston, and I'm very proud. Now I became Texan. I'm no longer Canadian. I consider myself, you know, a Houstonian, because I love the diversity that we have in our city.
Yes.
I remember when Ike Hurricane hit, or even like most recently is the flood, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful pictures of neighbors helping neighbors.
Yeah.
I want us to remember that. Let's forget about all the chaotic hatred that currently happened. Why cannot we come back to that loving spirit?
Sure.
Because that's what Houston is all about.
I think you're right. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And we have that. Houston has the heart of diversity, a heart of inclusion, and the heart of loving each other.
Oh, yeah.
I believe in that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Anlin.
Yes.
And Anlin, you wrote a book. Tell us about this book.
Yeah, this is my lifetime mission. And it came from my 30 years of working continuously on youth leadership development, on personal development, and how we can live our best life. Instead of, you know, have to wait until something happened, how can you live every moment of the day, every day, as the best moments of your life?
And what is the name of the book again?
It's called Living in Grace.
Living in Grace.
Yes, Living Your Best Life Now. And it became an international bestseller in US, Canada, and Australia. But because of COVID, I couldn't do a book tour.
Okay, Anlin. Well, I really appreciated your stories here and information. And it's been an inspiration for all of us. Thank you for being on our program.
Oh, thank you. It's my honor to be there. And I hope that all the audience will have a good time. Very good. And thank you for paying attention to our Vietnamese community. I think there's a significant population, but it's not very well known in the mainstream.
Well, you know what, Anlin?
Yeah.
You know what? I couldn't imagine Houston without the Vietnamese community. It's such an integral part. So it's not invisible to me.
Well, I'm your host, Eric Heen, and you're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. I'd like to remind you that we are in the home stretch of our fund drive, so now is the time to help this radio station deliver its quality programming. Please call 713-526-5738 with your donation, which is also 713-JAM-KPFT. It's even fun to type in 713-JAM, J-A-M-K-P-F-T. Or you can go to kpft.org and you click on the donations button, and then you can scroll down to So What's Your Story to designate us as the program you support. And when you contribute, believe me, you'll feel better about yourself, because then you'll know that you're a part of making this happen. So it's 713-526-5738 or kpft.org and click on the donations button. Next guest will be Judy Lee from right here in Houston. Judy is the CEO of the Take Root organization, and she works with clients to create meaningful change in their work and communities. Judy is also an instructor for the Glasscock School at the Rice University, where she teaches courses in leadership. Now, I got to come clean here for a second. I conducted a Zoom conference with Judy, where she told a spellbinding story of her refugee experience. But due to my technological ineptitude, the audio did not come out quite well enough. However, Judy told essentially the same story for a Houston Refugee Voices event, and we have a recording of that talk. So here it is.
My story has always been my story. It is my parents' story. It is my family's story. It's also the story of 3 million Vietnamese refugees in our world. My story starts in 1977. My mother was pregnant with me, so I actually remember it as if it were yesterday. My brother was a year and a half at the time. And in 1977, that's 2 years after the Vietnam War ended. 2 years long enough for my parents to make the impossible decision of leaving the only home they have ever known. And so on a dark night, they boarded a ship off the coast of Vietnam to escape and were promptly caught. Everyone was thrown into prison. So I was an inmate before I was even born. My mom, they showed mercy on her because she was pregnant with me and she had my brother to take care of. And so they released her after a few days. My father, he was not so lucky. He would spend 18 months in a labor prison. He doesn't talk much about that time for obvious reasons. But I remember going through a stack of old photos one day, and I found this beautiful old photo of my mother. And my dad saw me looking at that, and he said, "That picture, that got me through prison." You see, they had taken everything from him, and they left him with an empty wallet. And they wanted to take that photo as well. But my dad, always quick on his feet, he said, "That's the stock photo that came with my wallet when I bought it." And the guards looked at that picture, and my mom was so gorgeous that they believed him. Honestly, they probably looked at my gorgeous mother, and they looked at my dad and said, "Yeah, somebody who looks like that probably wouldn't pick somebody who looks like you." Right, Dad? And so my mom, not in prison, she didn't have it a whole lot more better either. She was scrappy, though. She did what she needed to do. She sold secondhand clothing on the streets. She slept on the streets. She dug ditches so that she could farm shrimp and sell at the market. 3 days after giving birth to me, she was in the rice fields tilling. And so after 18 months, my dad, he was released. And a few days later, he took my brother and attempted again to escape the country. Again, in the middle of the night, they boarded a ship. And that night, three ships left. One sunk, and everyone perished. The other ship got caught. Everyone went to jail. That third ship, no one knew what happened to that third ship. You see, there was a storm that night, and no one ever heard from that ship. And so for 3 months, my mom did not know what had happened to her son and her husband. Can you imagine that? 3 months, not knowing. There's a good ending, though. They made it. And they made it to Malaysia, and I'm not going to tell that story, but I got to tell you, it's a really good story. There's pirates, there's shipwreck, there's tons of drama. So over a year later, my mom and I, we try our luck again. And so, in the middle of the night, we sneak through jungles, we sneak through fields, we get on a beach, we get on a 40-foot wooden fishing boat that was not meant for 67 people. And it certainly was not meant for the open seas. But we were all optimistic because it was only supposed to be 3 days. And like Gilligan thought his tour was supposed to be a 3-hour tour, Ours was not 3 days. We were at sea for 21 days. The seas were rough for almost the entirety of our trip. And on that 20th day, it had calmed down. And everyone was so grateful because we were in bad shape. We were lost at sea, no fuel, no food, no water. Everyone was quite desperate. People were starting to drink the seawater. I was not going to last much longer. In fact, I was in such bad shape that a few people had suggested that they throw me overboard as a sacrifice to the ocean, in hopes that the ocean will sort of show mercy on everyone else. And on that 20th day, way out in the horizon, there was the outline of a tiny ship. And it just stayed there for hours. It didn't come toward us, but it didn't sail away either. And overnight it stayed. And finally, on that 21st day, that tiny little outline started getting bigger and bigger and bigger until we screamed with joy when we saw the American flag. It was the USS Kilauea, a naval supply ship of the 7th Fleet. You see, they had to stay out there for a long time because they were awaiting news from the Pentagon to give them the clearance to come rescue us. We would be the first Vietnamese refugee boat rescue of the 7th Fleet. In fact, it made news in the United States. And there's a photo of me on the front page of the Philadelphia newspaper of a Navy sailor carrying me from the refugee boat onto the naval ship. So I was already famous before I came to America. So what they knew that we didn't know was that the seas were calm because there was a storm approaching. And they knew that we would not survive that storm, and we would join at the bottom of the ocean 300,000 other Vietnamese boat people who did not survive their journeys. 300,000 at the bottom of the sea. And so we came on board, they gave us blankets and they gave us water, and they told us that they needed to blow up our ship because it's not safe to have an unmanned ship floating out at sea. And so we were all on the deck, and my mom remembers this story. And as they blew our boat into tiny little wind pieces, all of those refugees stood there with tears silently streaming down their faces. And I asked my mom, why were they crying? She was quiet. For a while, she chuckled a little bit. She was lost in her own thoughts for a while, and she just said, I don't know. I don't know is another way of saying there were too many things that they were feeling. And I honestly believe that one of those things is that they were crying because that ship represented the last physical tether that they had to their motherland and had been blown to bits. So that naval ship, they took us to Singapore where there was a refugee camp. And let me tell you something, that refugee camp is like the Ritz-Carlton of refugee camps. That refugee camp would have gotten very high ratings on Yelp. It had shelter, it had resources, it had food, it had school. My dad and my brother, on the other hand, they were not anywhere near the Ritz-Carlton of refugee camps in Malaysia. It was an overcrowded refugee camp with very few resources. And they were there for a very long time. And after quite a bit of time, we finally reunited as a family and settled in Houston. And as most refugee stories go, when you make it to a free land, your story does not end there. In fact, another one simply begins. Let me brag on my parents for a second. In Vietnam, my dad was a big deal. He was an attorney, a hotshot attorney, highly successful, really good at what he did in his job. My mother was a top college student, hugely promising future. In Houston, my dad's first job was knocking door to door to door in Fourth Ward selling funeral insurance. Not life insurance, funeral insurance. Can you imagine opening the door to this strange Asian man in his broken English asking you if you'll buy insurance because he thinks you'll probably die soon? I mean, talk about your all-time annoying solicitors, right? My mom, she had three jobs. She cleaned hotel rooms at the Ritz-Carlton. And she also stocked shelves for two department stores. And she talks about a time when she felt like she had made it, when she could spare two quarters to buy some tacos at Taco Bell. And so just as we didn't survive on our own, we certainly did not thrive on our own. It took a whole community of people and organizations such as the ones that are represented here today to believe in us and to see our humanity. And so for that, we are proud Americans. And we are enthusiastic contributors to our communities and to our country. My brother, he's a job creator. As for me, my job, I'm a leadership developer and coach. I mean, I talk about your all-time believer in human potential and the American dream. And so now, as a parent to two very young children, I'm often struck by the ridiculousness of the decisions that I have to make for them compared to the ones that my parents had to make for us. Tennis camp or art camp, guitar lessons or piano lessons. And I'm overwhelmed with gratitude that my parents did what they had to do, so I get to make the decisions that I'm making today. This talk about refugees, there's so much talk about where they are going to. Let us stop for a moment and consider what they are running from. When the very real likelihood of death and the promise of hardship, if you should survive, are better options than staying where you are, you know that there is human suffering. This week, it's been a hard week. It's been a hard week filled with a lot of darkness, spurred by a lot of hatred. And as I think about all of that and the cold, daunting statistics of displaced people in the world today, and I reflect on my own story, there are so many emotions that come. Yet there is one prevailing one, and that is of love. You see, when you choose love, as my parents chose love, you choose to make life and death decisions so your children and your children's children may be free. When you choose love, you choose courage despite facing your greatest fears. When you choose love, you choose resilience in the face of hardship. When you choose love, you choose to believe in humanity and potential and welcome people into your communities. So this story, this is my story. This is my family's story. This is the story of every refugee who's come before me, and every refugee that will come after me. And I hope that what you will always remember is this story, these stories. They are love stories. Thank you.
Wow. Incredible. That was Judy Lee.
Well, this is Eric Keene, and you are listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's Community Radio, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. And here's what's happening in the world of storytelling in the Houston area.
Everyone is welcome to join the Houston Storytellers Guild. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month for their monthly story swaps. And they have workshops and other events. And their next big event is the annual Liars Contest, which will be held on April 30th. You can find out more about the Houston Storytellers Guild by going to houstonstorytellers.org. And you can visit our program on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and go to the page, So What's Your Story? And don't forget our friends at The Moth. They feature monthly story swaps the second Tuesday of every month. And their next swap will be on March 8th at The Warehouse Live. Well, KPFT is winding down their fund drive, so here's your chance to help make things happen. Because when you donate, you feel good about yourself, knowing you're a part of this radio station's production. And where else can you hear such eclectic and cultural programming as you do on KPFT? So you can help by calling us at 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and click on donation. And then you can scroll down to our program, So What's Your Story, and designate us as the program you support when you donate. So it's 713-526-5738 or kpft.org and click on donations. Well, our next guest is Chu Dang. Dang is originally from Nam Dinh in North Vietnam, and he left Vietnam in 1970 to attend the University of Florida, where he got his PhD. Then he returned to Vietnam and taught at the University of Saigon, then later fled Vietnam in 1980, and since he's worked for the city of Houston until his retirement in 2019. Dang, good to have you here on So What's Your Story?
Thank you, sir.
Now, Dang, you originated in North Vietnam, and then from there you went to the South and then America, then back to Vietnam. So your life's gone through quite a journey there. So let's hear your story.
Okay, sir. I was born in the north of Vietnam in the small town called Nam Dinh City. That is the third largest town in the north. My family is quite crowded. I have nine brothers and sisters. Let me tell you what happened in 1954. The French government signed the Geneva Agreement with the communism. The agreement divided Vietnam into two parts. The north part, it belonged to the communism, and the south governed by state of Vietnam as a democracy. But at that time, nobody in the North Vietnam know anything about communism, so socialism. So people are very confused. So my father and mother don't know what to do. So they decide send me, only me, to the South with the family, with my father's friends. Then I live in Saigon with my uncle and his wife. But they have no children, so they treat me as their son. In the first few years, I missed my family, my father, my mother, my brother and sister so much. But time is a very good remedy. And in 1962, the Vietnamese War escalated to a severe level. The South Vietnamese Liberation Front, which the backing of the North, grew stronger and stronger day by day. They opened attacked major cities in the South. 4 years attended university went by so fast. I graduated from the University of Saigon when I was 22 years old. In 1966, the war in South Vietnam was at its critical stage. Thousands and thousands of men were deployed in the battlefield. Cannons of the Communist Army hit several rounds into the city of Saigon every night. The attack of the communists, the Tet Offensive in January 1968 changed my life. By the middle of 1968, the government called for a major enlistment throughout the nation. And my uncle and his wife worried for me so much. He afraid that I will be drafted very soon. They want me to get married. And obeying the wishes of my uncle, I got married. I received more good news in the middle of 1969. I was awarded a full scholarship to attend University of Florida, and I left the country in March 1970. At that time, I had two sons. I arrived to the United States and began attending the busy school board. During that period of time, Vietnam was turned to other directions. It was more bloody. And in 1972, the US government withdrew its troops from Vietnam while the Viet Cong received the maximum aid from North Vietnam, from China, from the Soviet Union. The South Vietnamese soldiers have to fight with courage and hopeless with the minimum supply left. Besides that heavy schoolwork, I have to face with all the problems that was the anti-war movement. As a student come from South Vietnam, I was asked many questions about the war, about South Vietnamese government. It made me so headache. I graduated in December 1974, and I decided to return home. I continued teaching at University of Saigon. Then the Vietnam was ended when the Communist Army took over South Vietnam in April 1975. Everybody was shocked at that. The new government had just granted me the permission to teach at university, but my knowledge was being controlled totally by a group of uneducated people from the jungle. When I left the North Vietnam in 74, my house land was confiscated. My father died later. My brother, sister could not attend school or could not work because I was in the South. So for the future of my children, and for myself, my wife and I decided to flee the communist regime. I left the country by boat at the small town near the Mekong River with 96 people, including women and children, in a small wooden boat. On the second day, we were hit by a thunderstorm. We are lucky because we survived the storm. During a few days, we met hundreds of international trade ships, but none were willing to help us. It was a fortnight when you hear the scream from the deck, Thai pirate in the distance, a fishing boat appeared. Five or six strong men holding guns stopped at the side of the boat. They ordered us to turn off the engine of the boat. They took on the gold, watch, or anything valuable. After that, they ordered 10 of the youngest women to follow them to the boat. Because of 4 days with no food, we don't have any weapon in our hand, we are helpless. Our misfortune were only beginning. The following afternoon, another Khai Barret boat appear. However, since all of our valuables were stolen, the pirates was very angry. They destroyed the engine of the boat. They dumped all the food, drinking water into the sea. They also ordered more than 10 women to go over their boat. After that, they pulled out our boat far out of the sea. We are desperate. The engine is destroyed. There are no engine, no food, no drinking water. The boat floats out in the sea for the next 8 days. We see a lot of commercial ships pass by, but none of them willing to stop and help us. A lot of children die in their parents' arms from the starvation, and a lot of elderly women died too. One afternoon, a small boat appeared. We thought it was another pirate boat coming. But when the boat docked, we saw that they are fishermen from the area. The fishermen know that we are in a dire situation, so they tie our boat next to theirs and pull us to the nearby island. That is how we are rescued. Of the 96 of us who set foot on the boat, only 51 of us survived to see the end of our journey. And I learned that from 1975 to that time in 1980, about 1.5 million left Vietnam, and about one third was died on the sea or in the jungle.
Incredible. So your boat left with 96 people, and it was
only 51 survived.
And you got hit by pirates who stole everything, and they took some of the women with them.
Again.
And then you got hit by pirates again, and because you didn't have anything, they tore up your boat.
Yes.
Ruined the engine.
Destroyed the engine and dumped food, water to the sea.
And you say quite a few ships and boats saw you, but they just intentionally did not want to help?
No. About 1,000, a lot of commercial ships passed by. No one helped us.
So finally, it was the Indonesian fishermen that helped you.
Yes, sir. I stayed in the refugee camp until June 1981, before I resettled in Houston, Texas. As soon as I reached the USA, I began to process for immigrating my wife and children. In 1980 to 1990, thousands of Indo-Chinese reset in Houston every month. Then in 1991, my wife and my children arrived in Houston after 10 years of waiting.
Wow.
And I was hired by City of Houston as a senior community liaison. I set up weekly police radio and television talk show. I invite the police officer to talk to the community in different parts of the city. After 3 years, the number of Vietnamese police officer increased from 3 in 1991 to almost 200 in 1994. I retired from the city of Houston after 28 years serving the community and almost 4 years to serving them.
Well, Deng, that's really a fascinating story of your life. And I'd like to thank you for being our guest here on So What's Your Story?
Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps up our show for today, folks. I'd like to thank our three guests, Anlin Nguyen, Judy Lee, and Chu Dang, for sharing their inspiring stories about their refugee experience. And in light of the recent events in the Ukraine, I like to think our three guests really gave us something to think about. And I'd like to remind you one more time that KPFT is in the waning hours of their latest pledge drive. So here's your chance to put some icing on the cake by calling 713-526-5738 and contribute to this station. Or you can go to kpft.org and click on the donation button. And don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower is up next with a cool mix of soul music on R&B Gold. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life, and tune in to So It's Your Story at 5 p.m. every Thursday, and treasure what you hear. This is Eric Heen, and along with the rest of the So It's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
Let's watch the sun come up in another town. Try our luck a little further down. Leave the cards on the table, leave the bread on the plate. Put your hand on the gear shift, put your foot off the brake, and take one last look at the place that you are leaving. Take one last look. Oh, take one last look at the place that you are leaving. Take one last look. I bet we're something that the wind can carry. The arrow points away across the waiting prairie. This car looks like it could give us a good run. Our choice to leave was a good one. And take one last look at the place that you are leaving. Take one last look. Oh, take one last look at the place that you are leaving. Take one last look. Let's look forward to the lights that are new.
Community media matters. What does the future of progressive media look like? You get to decide. Join us on Saturday, March 5th, 2022, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for a town hall meeting powered by the Community Advisory Board of KPFT. The purpose of this town hall meeting is to bring programmers, listeners, and people from diverse communities committed to a mission to promote peace and justice. This democratic process is achieved through public discourse. Panel members will provide accurate, objective, and comprehensive strategies for news and information on all matters concerning progressive programming. Register at www.kpftcommunityadvisoryboard.org.
Greetings, KPFT listeners. This is DJ Metalord, host of Sweet Nightmares Radio Show. Sweet Nightmares Radio Show has been supporting the metal underground and everything in between, from the classics to the newest releases, since 1987. You can catch the show every Thursday, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. on the FM band. Also, listen to an encore presentation every Saturday. Yes, every Saturday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the HD2 channel. Sweet Nightmares, only on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hi, I'm Charles Hightower, host of the R&B Gold Show, 6 p.m. till 8, right here on KPFT, Houston's Community Station. I'll be moving and grooving with all the good classic soul just for you on KPFT.
You're listening to...